listening to the Save the Marriage podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
For many people, the first line of defense in the middle of a marriage crisis is marriage therapy. It kind of makes sense. You know, we grow up in a culture that's all about therapy these days. The Western world is so therapized that that's kind of our ready answer for things that when they go wrong. The problem is marital therapy hasn't exactly lived up to the expectations of people. I've talked about this before. The statistics in general about marital therapy are kind of dismal. In fact, it's a kind of a 50-50 coin toss about whether if you go to therapy, you'll end up divorced or not. In other words, the people who go to therapy don't beat the national average on staying together. Not only that, when they do a little more research, they ask how many people are satisfied with what happened to marital therapy. And that's kind of scary too. Somewhere between 10 and 15%, no more than 20% ever say they got anything out of therapy. 10 to 15% is kind of the norm for the research on that. And again, this research, it's not like they do that research every day, but this has been consistent across the studies that they've done about the outcomes of marital therapy. Now, let me say that that doesn't mean that marital therapy is bad. It doesn't mean that there aren't some people who get good effects from marital therapy, because these are generalized across the platform. Not knowing anything about the therapist, it's just the people who went to marital therapy, and if you can't see it, I'm doing some air quotes around marital therapy, and that's the record. About 50%, half and half, whether they stay married or not. And only 10%, let's call it even 15% on the generous side, said that they got a good effect from therapy. So today I want to talk about a piece of this. I want to talk about how you can really mess up the possibility of having a good outcome from marital therapy. Now, first of all, you have to decide what your good outcome might be, because there are plenty of people who may go to marital therapy and the outcome they want is to be able to leave the marriage in a way that's somewhat healthy. So I'm going to set that aside and assume that the reason that people who are listening to this podcast would go to marital therapy is to save the marriage. That's why I'm around, and that's why a lot of people are here. So I'm going to make that assumption that we're working from the aspect that marital therapy is in the interest of saving a marriage. I want to talk about some reasons why people can really mess up the marital therapy possibility. And if you avoid these things, then you have a better chance of being able to find something useful from that process. So today, the topic is the three ways to absolutely guarantee that marriage therapy will fail. The reason I use the ways that it will fail is because then you can work from the opposite way of thinking about how to do the opposite of these things so that you can actually work to improve your marriage if you indeed decide to go to marital therapy. Now, from the outset, let me tell you, marital therapy is not the only way of getting help for your marriage. It's a way, not the way. It's a way. There are lots of other ways. Coaching, relationship coaching is one way. Retreats are another way. Self-study would be another way. DVDs. I mean, there's so many ways that we can now take in information that have nothing to do with having that therapist in the room with you. So remember that if you decide not to do marital therapy, there are lots of other avenues. That's what I've been about, developing other ways and methods for people to get help for their marriage. So, now, without any further ado, let's talk about the three ways you can absolutely guarantee marriage therapy will fail. Number one, choose the wrong therapist. It seems kind of self-evident, right? If you choose the wrong therapist, you're probably not going to get the effect you want. It's kind of like if you broke your arm, the likelihood of getting help if you go to a cardiologist is pretty low. Yes, they're both a doctor, but that doesn't mean that they're able to work on the same thing. Or let's say that you run a big business and you decide to go to your personal accountant around the corner that does more bookkeeping than accountant, and you wouldn't be surprised to know that you're probably not going to get the kind of help that you want. You want to make sure that you're getting the kind of help you want. The problem is the difference in understanding. For many people, they think, oh, therapist. So the therapist can do any kind of therapy. Just like there are specializations throughout the world, throughout the professions, there are specializations in therapy. And this is a big one. The difference between a marital therapist and an individual therapist. So let's talk a little bit about what I mean by that. First of all, let's talk about training. An individual therapist has been trained to understand the individual psyche, the internal workings of the individual. They can come at it from a lot of different approaches, and you probably have noticed those different approaches. For instance, they might be a cognitive behavioral therapist, or they might be a Freudian therapist, or they might be a Jungian therapist, or a Rogerian therapist, or we could just keep on wiping through all the different modalities of understanding. But it's basically an understanding method that they understand how an individual's internal world is working, as opposed to marital therapy, which is understanding the interactive world between two people. Not only the interactive world, the communicative world, the communication world, but also the systemic world about how they kind of work in sync, in unison, and in opposition to each other. In other words, how individuals struggle with each other in the midst of an intimate relationship, which doesn't necessarily have a lot to do with how their internal psyche is. Now, there are overlaps because a marriage is made of two individuals, but that doesn't mean the therapist is ready to deal with those two individuals. They might be greatly ready to deal with an individual, but when you put two together, it changes the whole equation. So marital therapy is a specialized training. So here's the unfortunate part. Many therapists end up specializing in the people who come into their office. That doesn't mean they have the background training, the theoretical orientation, or the specific training in doing therapy with that particular population. And there's no restriction on that. If you are trained as an individual therapist, it doesn't mean you can't go out and tell people you're a marital therapist. And so there's no way for people to know that unless they ask. A lot of times people go to a few classes and they learn how to work with couples, but that's not, in my opinion, in-depth enough. I really believe that there is a true orientation difference between understanding the psyche of an individual and the interpersonal relationship between two people. It's a whole different orientation and understanding, a way of viewing the world. One is from that individualistic model, the other is from a systems model, and that changes the equation right off. So there's an orientation to individual versus to a group of people. There's also a training difference. And when people do marital therapy training, that means that they have like a lot of training, lots of classes that are about that, not about the individual psyche. And they have supervision around that topic, that they have had skilled marital therapists who can work with them and help them do their therapy better. And then the experience. There is a difference. There's no way around this between people who have been doing this for years and people who have just started. That doesn't mean there aren't great people who have just come in, but you know, if you're looking for somebody to operate on you, you're probably looking for somebody who's done that operation over and over again. They know the groove, right? So all of these pieces can contribute to whether you end up with the right therapist or not. One of the things I always suggest that people ask is, who is the client? You ask the therapist, right? I just said you ask the therapist, which means that you might be interviewing different therapists to see who is the best fit for you and your spouse. You might need to look around. A lot of times people do very little research on who's going to be doing their therapy, and yet that's an important decision in the process. So to ask the question, who is the client, can tell you a lot about their orientation. If I talk to someone who is a marital therapist, I say, who is the client? And they'll tell me the relationship, the marriage, the two people together are the client. If I ask an individual therapist who the client is, they usually fumble about each person being their client, or the person who called them being their client, or they don't understand the question. So they're answering a lot when they can't tell you that the client is the relationship. That's the right answer. They get points for saying, it's the relationship. I'm here for the marriage. I'm here for the relationship. That's my client. So part of what we're often looking at is also how they start the process. The therapy world has often come to believe that the therapist needs to be neutral. I don't agree with that orientation around marriage. I want you to think again once about a doctor. Let's say you did break your arm, right? And you go see a doctor, and the doctor looks at it and says, yeah, it's broken. I'm kind of either way, whatever you want to do. If you want to leave it, that's fine. If you want to fix it, that's fine too, right? I mean, that's neutral. It doesn't matter what you do. It's your arm's broken. So we can fix it. We can leave it alone. If you like it at that angle, hey, we'll just leave it be. If you like it to be fixed, yeah, I can do something about that. That's neutral. A doctor, if you walk in and your arm's broken, the doctor says, hey, I know what we need to do. We need to do whatever it is that they have to do, whether it's casting it or, you know, splinting it or whatever it's going to be. They have an orientation towards fixing the problem that you come in with. I believe that marital therapy, when it's working well to restore a relationship, starts with the assumption that you're going to fix the relationship if at all possible, not I'm neutral on this. I believe in a pro-marriage stance, and a therapist who will admit to a pro-marriage stance in order to move towards that. Otherwise, it feels very wishy-washy because there is always the question, which is, by the way, a great individual marital question or individual therapy question, not so good a marital therapy question, which is, well, how do you feel about that? What do you want to do, right? Most of the time when people are in a marriage problem, they're going to need some practical advice, because they don't know what to do. And so the therapist has to be willing to offer some advice, some feedback, and some guidance along with the listening that any therapist can do. Okay, so the number one way to absolutely guarantee marriage therapy will fail is to choose the wrong therapist. The number two way to absolutely guarantee marriage therapy will fail is to drag your resistant spouse into therapy. This happens all of the time. And the problem is that when a resistant spouse shows up for therapy, they become more resistant, not less. I have a rule for myself, for anybody that I'm offering relationship coaching to, that I will not coach two people on the phone. I will not coach a couple on the phone unless both people are ready to move forward in working on the relationship. Both people. If somebody is not, if one person in the relationship is not wanting to do that, the nice thing about coaching is I can coach that one person to begin working on the relationship. That's not the same thing in therapy. You can't do marital therapy without both people being there, but both people have to be willing to be there and ready to move forward. Otherwise, the person who is resistant in the smallest way will harden their position. They'll start rationalizing, and they'll start convincing themselves of how they are so right about the fact that nothing can happen. And so in the process, they create an intractable position that nothing can be saved. You actually do damage to the possibilities of saving your marriage if you try to drag your spouse into therapy and they don't want to be there. Now, here's the thing. Most people do that for one simple reason. They have a fantasy. And their fantasy is that the therapist will somehow be able to magically convince a spouse to work on it. Therapists can do great work when two people want to work on the relationship. But no therapist has the magical hypnotic capacity of casting a spell on somebody and making them want to work on a marriage. And yet many people have the fantasy of that happening. So they can't get their spouse convinced to work on the relationship. They'll get the professional to do it, as if the professional has some magic wand that does that. And so let me assure you that we therapists do not have the capacity of convincing a spouse who does not want to work on it to work on it by dragging them into therapy. Not only that, but I want you to understand that when I'm saying willing to work on it, I'm not talking about begrudgingly willing to go to therapy. Just as a spouse can't be convinced to work on the marriage, if they have this part where they're like, fine, I'll go to therapy, right? You may have be familiar with that feeling. Fine, I'll go to therapy, but it won't work. Don't go, oh, great, I'll make an appointment. It's not time to make an appointment at that moment. the spouse has not enlisted in the process of saving the marriage, they may be going to therapy for lots of reasons, like to prove that nothing will work, to prove that they actually did the right thing and went to therapy, to prove that this is a lost cause, or to pick a fight with a spouse in the middle of therapy. So here's the difference. Willing means, yes, I want to work on improving our relationship. Begrudging is, fine, I'll go if that's what you want, if it'll make you feel better. Notice the difference. One is committed to the process of restoring things. The other is being dragged in. And I promise you, the one being dragged in will only dig in their heels deeper as the process goes on. You might not notice it the first week, maybe not even the second week, but eventually you'll see that they begin to convince themselves and they work to convince the therapist that nothing can be done. And oh, by the way, they tried. So the second way you can absolutely guarantee that marriage therapy will fail is to drag a resistant spouse into the therapy office. Guaranteed that that will harden their position and make sure that they are digging in. Remember this term, psychological reactance. Psychological reactance is the idea that we will react against something even if we agree with it. If it feels like somebody's telling us what to do. So part of the process of having a successful movement through therapy is for both people to be committed to working through the process and to go to therapy to help in that process. Very simple piece of that. Okay, the third way to absolutely guarantee that marriage therapy will fail is one I see all the time when they use the session as a weekly gripe session. I remember when I realized how almost habitual this could become when I was listening to this couple. They were in the other waiting room while I was finishing up a therapy session. I heard them because they were always conflictual in my office, always kind of getting into an argument. And I was hearing them laughing and joking with each other out in the therapy office, in the waiting room. Then they come into the therapy office and immediately start picking at each other and talking about all of the horrible things that had happened that week. I couldn't figure out where the couple had gone that had been in my waiting room because I certainly didn't have them in my office. All they were doing for the solid 50 minutes was griping about the week. No matter what I did, they returned to their gripes. So understand this key point. A therapist is not a referee. That's not the purpose of therapy. Therapy is about rebuilding and remodeling the relationship to get something that both people want to have. You don't get there through the fight. What has ended up happening for a lot of people is they've begun to think that therapy is where you hash it out, right? And I remember people would come into my office and they would pull out a list of what they needed to talk about that week. And all of the list were the difficult points, the struggles, the hardships of the week, the gripes of the week. And so we would have a gripe session and I would say, let's not talk about the list. Let's talk about where you want to get to. Well, I will as soon as I go through my list was the typical response. It's hard to dissuade a client to not make it a gripe session. So if you're the client, don't make it a gripe session, because one of the things that happens is you begin to constantly orient yourself towards the problem. That's what a gripe session does. It's an orientation to the problem and a statement of the fact that you're not getting what you should out of it. It doesn't move you towards the end goal. What is the end goal? To prove that you've been done wrong or to build a great relationship? For me, the end goal of therapy should be creating a relationship that both people would treasure and protect. And yet they go about it by attacking each other and complaining. You can see how that fights what you're trying to get to. The other piece that happens when you use the gripe session is that it creates a strong negative orientation to help and therapy. People begin to associate going to that office with it being an awful experience. They begin to associate putting on their armor and having to defend themselves or attack the other person in the middle of therapy. No wonder that people don't always want to go back for a next visit, because all that happens is the same thing. There's the rehashing and the griping, and nobody wins that because it's not going towards the right goal. Now, what is the session? It's a safe place to build, not a safe place to complain. You see, those words that are used in the therapy office, even if the therapist is able to restate them, have already done damage to the other person. They feel it in their psyche. They've been attacked. So a lot of times people go, well, it's the only place I have to gripe. And my answer to that is, but the griping is not getting you anywhere, so maybe the griping is not the goal. Maybe it's not about finding a safe place to gripe. Maybe it's about creating a safe place to build the relationship you both want. For me, the outcome, it should be working towards a relationship that you both love and treasure. If it's anything other than that, you probably are not doing the work that's going to move you in that direction. So the three ways to absolutely guarantee marriage therapy will fail. Number one, choose the wrong therapist. Make sure you're choosing someone whose orientation is matching where you want to get to. Number two, drag your resistant spouse to therapy. If your spouse is resistant right now, it's not the time to go to therapy. And number three, to use a session as a weekly gripe session. If your spouse is willing to be there for both of you to build to something you want. Now, if you're not ready for that, if you're saying, well, wait a minute, what do I do now? I can't find the right therapist, or my spouse is resistant, or we've gone and we keep griping at each other. So what do we do? Well, that's the reason I created the Save the Marriage system, to give you a basic place to build from, even if you use that as a stepping stone of therapy. Therapy may still be in your future. You may be so convinced that therapy is the way to do it. You still want to do that. Let's do some groundwork first so you know what you're taking into therapy. If that's something you think would be useful, you can grab the system by going to savethemarriage.com. Savethemarriage.com. Grab the Save the Marriage system, begin rebuilding that peace. You'll understand more about why you're trying to get to a different place with your spouse, what therapy could be about, because you know what you're trying to build towards. And you'll break through that gripe session that tends to haunt many couples. Remember, Save the Marriage system at savethemarriage.com. And do remember that if you're headed for therapy, avoid those three mistakes so that you can come to a better outcome from therapy than you would have otherwise. This is Lee Balcom wishing you the best as you work to save your marriage.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at savethemarriage.com.